This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We continue live from Peoria, Arizona, side of Mariners spring training. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. A pleasure to bring back to the program the man who calls the shots for this team, the president of baseball operations, the one, the only, Jerry DePoto is with us. How are you, man?
Not too bad. Surviving. You know, it's been a good spring generally.
What is your feeling during spring? Are you kind of walking around seeing and just going, I hope everybody just gets out of this unscathed? Is that priority number one, or are you starting to look at individuals and their development first, or what's the priority for you?
On a 10-point scale, the first 9 are what you said to begin, which is let's get out of here healthy, and we are. We're tracking, particularly the young players, see how they perform, see how they've improved year over year. You know, you see guys, and this includes young major leaguers as well as the kids on the back field. It's, you know, that's the most exciting part of the spring for me. And then it's just the visits, you know, visiting with, you know, with 2 or 3 guys a day, getting a feel for where they're at. And you know, this is a good camp, and it has been a good camp for the years that we've been here. And I think players like it, and they perform well, they enjoy it.
That's our favorite part. Like, we talk to Cal, we know Cal, he's like a friend of the show, he comes on all the time. But every year, you know, you see him and Logan get more and more mature and things like that, and it's very rewarding, right? I mean, the fact that you guys have a good culture here and that these guys are growing up before our eyes.
Yeah, and I think that's the one of the pieces that a lot of people tend to overlook. We're still one of the youngest teams in the league. You know, I think on, you know, right now forecast for opening day rosters, I think we're the 5th youngest team in the big leagues. And, you know, and that's coming off of 3 pretty good seasons. And with those guys you mentioned, they're just now entering what should be the primes of their careers. And, and you know, that's an exciting thing when you've got Cal, you've got Logan, you've got George, some of the guys down in that bullpen, Miller, Wu, JP, these guys are all still doing the things that they should do for a number of years moving forward. That's exciting.
As far as the offseason went, you guys went in with a plan. That plan got altered, obviously, because of finances. And now you look at where you're at. Is there any surprise? Because I think if people are being fair and looking at the roster, it's kind of a minor miracle you guys were able to assemble the team you have, and you didn't give away any of your pitching.
No, I think, you know, we were definitely pursued on the pitching end and had numerous conversations there. But, you know, every offseason is a little bit different. And, you know, we always have a plan. It almost always changes. Sometimes it's driven by finance. Sometimes it's driven by circumstance. But, you know, you just adapt and you do the best you can to put the best 26, 40-man rosters that you can together. And I think for me, you know, the sniff test is when you come into spring training. Our players are confident. Our players believe this is a good team. We believe it's a good team, and I think you can tell by the, you know, the enthusiasm they have every day, and just talking to them. You know, it's a positive sign. I like the way we shaped up when all was said and done. And it was turbulent along the way, but you know, by the end, I really liked the way our roster came together.
When you talk to guys like Garver or Polanco or even Mitch Haniger, who went to the Giants and comes back, do they tell you about, you know, where does, as far as these other places, is the culture different? Are they able to noticeably, do they verbalize that to you?
Some do. You know, some do more than others. And you know, one of the benefits that we all have is we've been other places. We've played other places. We've worked other places. You know, so none of us, I shouldn't say none of us, few of us are exclusive to this culture. But over the course of time, we've stabilized in this culture. And I think the greatest litmus test is a guy like Mitch. You know, Mitch Haniger, not the other Mitch Garver.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, Hanny was here. He was here through a lot of our formative years. You know, he was here through a mini teardown. He was here through a buildup. He was here through our return to the postseason. He left. Now he's back. And I think getting a read from him on how we've matured organizationally, and he's open about sharing that. And I think that's a positive thing for me. And actually, it was one of the highlights of my offseason was that he was happy to come back. Because you never know. And he was.
Hey, as far as the offseason goes, the big story was Scott going to visit all the team leaders and talk to them about, you know, hey, here's what the plan is. Here's what we're doing. And from the outside, we're looking at that going, man, what a good move. I mean, just cohesive, get people on your side, know that you're there for them. Were you part of that? Was that, were you surprised or were you suggesting it? What was your reaction to that whole thing?
We communicate pretty regularly. You know, I saw a few players and some in Seattle, some, you know, on their turf, you know, some here. And I don't think that's a super uncommon thing. You know, but because of the nature of our offseason, it became a little bit more pronounced this offseason. And, you know, and that's just good feel, knowing, you know, when you need to reach out and connect. And when, you know, baseball's funny in this way, and I don't know what it was like in football. I don't know what it's been like in your lives, but you can not talk to somebody for a decade, and then you pick up the conversation where you left off the last time. And you know, so it's when the guys go away for the offseason, they're not out of sight, out of mind. You just pick up when you come back to spring training. And I think this offseason required a little extra TLC, and Scott had the foresight and the feel to kind of drive that train, and I think it's a good thing.
Tell us about, Cal told us yesterday, really he's a hitting coach, but Brown, you know, Coach Brown, what he's doing, the offensive coordinator seems kind of like a weird title. It's more of a football thing, but as far as that, and is that maybe done a little bit also because of the slow start and the supposed marine layer we've been talking about and all the warning track, you know, shots and things like that? Is that with that in mind, or is it just that? Is that that's where the game is going? Everybody's has that kind of coach.
You know, we've had Brownie before, and you know the offensive coordinator. It's funny, 8 years ago, now going on 9, when we first got here, we actually, you know, came up with the idea of creating a baseball position called the offensive coordinator, with the notion that the offensive coordinator was responsible for how often we touch the plate. And more often, the hitting coach is responsible for the way the swing works, the mechanics of a swing. And weirdly, the pitching coach is working on delivery, releases, pitch qualities, and strategies, you know, how we're going to attack a team. The hitting coach is working in a cage talking about a swing. And and we wanted somebody who could oversee more in a coordinator-like fashion. How do we ensure that our offense includes base running, touching home plate? It's not just about, you know, making your swing as efficient as it can be. It's about playing team offense, and that's where Brownie comes in. He's a big personality. He's got a lot of the same philosophies that we have, and he has a very different way of putting it. And we thought that, I don't know if we're going to take the marine layer out of, you know, the marine, but at the end of the day, we do, you know, we do want to change the way our offense works. And Brownie is stressing the importance of team offense, and I think that's a big thing for us.
How many teams do you think have a guy like that?
I would say it's more common now than it certainly when it was when we were playing, when we had one hitting coach. You know, but you know, now with the increasing sizes of major league coaching staffs, you know, we're on that path as well, where we're growing, and you know, Brownie played a role like this, or actually he was the Jarrett DeHart in, you know, with the Dodgers, and they had 3 hitting coaches and an offensive coordinator type person that was driving this 7 years ago. So it's not uncommon, especially among teams that have had success in modern baseball, and we're just following that path.
Just getting back to, you know, how you talk about plans change in the offseason, you go in with a plan, invariably it's going to change for different reasons this year, you know, the cable deal, all that stuff. When that happened, did you already have a plan B, like, all right, here's our list of players we can go after in this scenario, and here's our list of players in this scenario if this happens? Or did you have to adjust on the fly, like, oh, wow, that's not what we thought we were working with. Now who do we target?
You know, I mean, we always have a series of different plans, because you don't know what players are going to be accessible or who's going to want to come your way. And you might reach out to a free agent and they're not interested. You might inquire about a trade and, you know, you can't find any traction. So you always have a series of names. And even as we went through December into January and February, where we had a clearer understanding of what, you know, what our roster, what our payroll number was going to look like, and what ultimately we wanted our team to look like. In today's game, you can't discount anyone. And part of that is seen through, and I'll just point to the trade that we made with San Francisco, where there were a lot of players included in that deal who had sizable salaries. And, you know, in today's game, especially through the course of the last 12 months, where there was a lot of economic turbulence around, you know, cable networks and RSNs, you know, there were other teams in similar circumstances to what we were, and you were able to find marriages sometimes based on those economics. So you couldn't discount that any player was available, and therefore this offseason's trade market probably better represented what a trade market might look like in mid-season, you know, in July, because so many teams were engaged. You know, it wasn't a super robust free agent market. Therefore, trades kind of drove the offseason, and there was a lot of discussion and activity on that front.
Getting back to the most disappointing thing is you have these great players and there's injuries. That you know, and that happens. But are you guys erring more on the side of caution, you know, when you see you shut a guy down? Is it, have you gotten more that way as the years have gone on, and as, you know, we've got more technology and better, and I'm sure you've kind of staffed up with the medical, you know, side of it. Has that been kind of the approach?
You know, we've kind of always been that way. And I think some of that is just my own experiences. You know, like my career was cut short by injury.
Yeah.
These guys are young. And, you know, there's a lot of career in front of them. We hope that the majority or all of that career is spent with the Mariners. And, you know, and this spring in particular, it's been notable in that, you know, I think we have one of the best bullpens in the league when they're all healthy.
Yeah.
We got to make sure that they're all healthy, you know, and we came into spring, and obviously we had a hiccup with Gregory Santos, an unforeseen hiccup with Matt Brash. And, you know, what we're going to, there's one of them is 26 years old. The other is 24, you know, and they both have so much career ahead of them. You know, it's incumbent on us to make sure that their career is productive. And, you know, we know over 162 game baseball season, I want to win on opening day, and I'd love to win on April 15th. We want to make sure that May, June, July, August, that we are a factor, and we are going to be a better team if those two are healthy. And, you know, the biggest thing is making sure that when they go out on the field, they are ready to pitch. In situations like you've seen with Matt Brash before, where you're pitching frequently, it's high leverage. You know, it's sometimes unpredictable. It could be three in a row, and we want to make sure that they are prepared for that before we send them out. You know, And I don't mean this to sound callous. We don't particularly care if we win on March 13th. You know, we do care if we win on April 13th.
Yeah.
So let's make sure they're healthy.
Hey, I'm just curious from a pitcher's perspective. That's what you did. We talked to Ryan Stanek the other day. He was talking about Brash and that slider, and he goes, that's make-believe. He called it make-believe, and he was just marveling at it. Just as a pitcher, when you see that, what – is that otherworldly to you, or can you relate to what he's doing, or do you look at that as how do you do that?
Oh, I can't relate to that particular thing. You know, there have been a few guys stuff-wise who I've seen in my baseball life where when a specific pitch comes out of their hand, you laugh out loud. You're like, oh my God, how do they hit that? And the truth is, when they execute that pitch, when Matt executes his slider, you know, they don't hit it. You know, I used to feel that way, like when Eric Gagne was at his height and his changeup, you throw that changeup. Pedro Martinez throws his changeup. You just don't hit it when they nail it. You know, Greg Maddux throws that backdoor jackknife sinker. You don't hit it. You're just trying to defend yourself. And they're laugh out loud worthy. And I think Brash has one of those pitches that's laugh out loud worthy.
Are we really going to see a knuckleball at a Kirby this year, you think?
I didn't expect that we would see one last year, but we did. You know? George got great feel. There seems to be nothing he can't do with the ball and nothing that he's not courageous enough to do in a game. So, you know, I think the answer to the question is remains to be seen. I'm sure it's not going to be a big part of his repertoire, but, you know, we expect a big season from George. And if it includes a couple of knuckleballs, I'm sure, you know, one of them will make me laugh out loud like I did last year.
Hey, the addition of Stanek, I think, is huge, especially in light of what you just talked about with Brash and Santos. But, you know, we had a chance to talk to him. First of all, what a great guy. I had a completely different image of him. Probably because he was wearing.
Yeah, he's not wearing an Astros uniform.
That made it hard. This is much easier. But just a really thoughtful guy when you're talking to him. But how big is he for his postseason experience? 23 games in the postseason and bringing that experience into this clubhouse.
You know, it's huge, and especially when he arrives. You know, quietly we had been engaged with Ryan's team since, you know, the start of spring training or just before, mostly seeing it as an opportunity. You know, he was available, and you know, we want to be good, and Ryan Stanek makes us better. And this was before we knew, you know, that there were issues potentially with Matt Brash or even Ryan Stanek or Gregory Santos. You know, but when you count all those guys together, it's a pretty phenomenal group. And, you know, Ryan's experiences, the fact that he has some, you know, he's been over the World Series bridge. He's got a ring on his finger. He can be the one that sits down there with that group. And truly, some of this you know and some of it you don't. The time just – talking to him. I mean, he is an easy guy to spend time with. You know, he seems very bright. He puts it together. He understands where he's been. I think that'll be very valuable because just like the rest of our team, that bullpen is full of guys who, while they have some experience, you know, Andres Munoz is 25. We just said Santos is 24. Brash is 26. It's a young group, and to have somebody down there with the kind of experiences that Stanek has, and you know, it's a plus. And to have somebody that can agitate the Astros 13 times a year, I would love that too.
Yeah.
That I'd really like.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, speaking of young guys, Julio, we talked to Scott about, you know, like the All-Star game, and he's in the Home Run Derby, and just all the pressure that was on him, and really liked what I heard out of him. What have you heard out of Julio? And he's only 23 years old now. I mean, started as 21, and I worried about him. I'm like, everybody's going to want a piece of this guy. And it just, the things that he said this year seemed very different than years past. What did you think?
You know, that was evident just in talking to him in the offseason, that was something he was focused on, was eliminating some of those distractions from his, you know, not just his preparation, but limiting the time that he was going to allow for, you know, non-baseball business. And you know, last year was a big deal. There were so many people pulling at Julio, and all of us would have reacted the same way. You're flattered by it. You want to be included. You want to be involved, you know. And you know, he's a young superstar, and everybody wanted a piece, especially in a year where the All-Star game was, yeah, in our town. And you know, and ran up to and including the league, you know. And he was a very popular figure. And you know, I think we got through it. After the All-Star break, we saw the best version of Julio maybe that we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it is, he's 23 years old. He's already been, you know, one of the most, you know, noteworthy players in the league for two consecutive seasons. And I don't think we've seen close to what he's capable of. And I think he knows that. He wants World Series. He wants championships. He wants, you know, he wants all of it. You know, he wants the statue on the street and the Hall of Fame. You know, because they're all within his reach. He has that kind of ability, and I think the thing that turns me on the most is he wants to lead. You know, he has entered that stage in his career. He has the financial security of a long-term contract. He has the respect of every single guy in that clubhouse, not just for his ability, but for how hard he works at it. And he's a great guy to be around. And so he checks every box. Now he wants to lead. And you have to earn that, you know, and I think he's earned that with his years in the league. And you can see some adjustments that he's making in this spring in the way he helps manage the others in the clubhouse. And that's going to be fun to watch because he's going to play here for, you know, longer than we're going to be here. I will tell you, I mean, I'll be shocked if I'm at the end, but you know, he is a phenomenal talent and he's a phenomenal person. And I think he's starting to see all the different ways that he can grow just beyond hitting a ball.
Yeah. What, one of the bigger talking points about spring so far has been Ty France and his transformation. He looks different. Is going into an off season like that, is that him that says, you know what, I need to change my body, I need to go to Driveline, or is that you and Scott saying, hey, here's something we think you should work on? How does that come about, that change?
You know, with Ty, I can't say that the latter part of that has never been shared. You know, like these are some things that are important to us, you know, but what Ty did this offseason, he did on his own. As I understand it, conversations with JP, conversations behind the door, like this is something. I think Ty went out last year coming off of a two-year run where Ty France was one of the best right-handed hitters in the league by adjusted statistics. You know, if you look at WRC plus, OPS plus, as good as anybody. And, you know, and I think he was a little bit embarrassed by the fact that he took a little bit of a downturn last year. You know, he went out and he did something about it, and that's to me how you handle things when you are not at your best. And I think Ty would be the first to tell you he wasn't at his best for a lot of the year last year. He was banged up. He gets hit a ton. Yeah. He plays hard, and a lot of that is going to result in some, you know, some highs and lows. But for the 2 years prior, it was hard to be more consistent, and he knows he's capable of that. And I think he went out and applied himself in the off season to do that. And he looks awesome. You know, physically, he looks awesome. Still the same guy. When words come out, he's, you know, when the swing, you know, swings a little faster, but same swing. The bat-to-ball ability's still elite. And Ty's still one of the best right-hander hitters in the game. He's just coming off of what wasn't his best year.
Would you like to see him make more of an attempt to get out of the way of the ball?
That's what I was going to ask.
it's funny. It's part of his game, you know. And you know, he wears enough armor that it still hurts like heck. But you know, I played for Don Baylor in Colorado, who's like the all-time nobody gets hit more than Don Baylor. And when you hug the plate like that, there are decided advantages. You know, Ty is not 6'5". He doesn't have naturally, you know, long plate coverage. He has to get on the plate to make sure that the thing that he does best is something that he can do, and he runs the risk that in doing so he's going to get hit. And he's accepted that as part of his game. You know, it actually factors into part of his on-base skill. And as long as it's happening in this region and he can manage through the pain, because it hurts, you know, no matter what you're wearing.
Yeah.
You know, he's remarkably tough. He comes back from doing it. I don't think it's going to get him off the plate because he has to be there in order to do the thing that he does best, which is, you know, manage the middle away part of that strike zone and do his damage that way, and he does.
Speaking of, you know, the physical side of it, as far as transformation, it looked like Canzone looks like he worked really hard.
Lo and behold, you know, he's a talented player, and he came into spring training. He went home. I asked him, you know, when he first arrived, you know, what are you doing in Cleveland in the off season? Because he looked like he was trying out for the Browns. You know, I mean, he looked physical, and Dom's a physical guy, but more in a wiry way. And he came in, he clearly spent a lot of time in the gym, which he told me is a common thing for him in the off season because it's cold outside. And he's always had the physical talent that we're seeing on the field down here. He hits the ball as hard and as far as anyone. And, you know, if Dom's pitch selection improves over what we saw in his maiden voyage in the big leagues, which we think he's capable of doing, there's a lot of ceiling there. You know, especially against right-hand pitching, which is, you know, the primary role that he'll play this year. But he's actually had success versus left-handers in the minor leagues because his bat-to-ball skills are different than a lot of guys. He doesn't miss very often. He does put barrel on the ball, and he has a knack for hitting it hard. And we've not yet seen the best of what Dom can offer. And it's you know, young players get better is the moral of the story. Is, you know, at 25, when you get your first shot at the big leagues, you know, sometimes it's not as easy as it might be when you're 26, 27, 28. And I think the best is in front of Dom Canzone.
Before we let you go, just looking at the assembled group you've got now, comparing it to this time last year, where's your confidence? I'm sure you're optimistic every year and you feel good about the team you assembled, but the vibe feels a little different this year to me. But I'm curious to you, does it feel different? Does it feel like there's more optimism?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like there's more optimism because I feel like there's more optimism externally. You know, when we were in camp last year, nobody knew that we were going to have a middling year. You know, there wasn't an expectation. We didn't get off to a bad start. We were 500 in the middle of May, you know, which is not an uncommon, you know, thing for a contending club. Yeah. You know, we then went on a terrible run through the middle of the season, and we had to recover from it. Now, nobody could have predicted some of the struggle that individual players would have, especially in the first half of last year, based on their career norms when we were sitting here on the patio last year. But, you know, the way our season went, the way it ended, the tumult through our offseason, you know, I think there is a freshness in the air. There is a vibe among our players that we are good. And we have been good. And I think it's time for this group just to take the next step. You know, we have a host of really talented young players that are now entering the primes of their career. We have veteran players who've been around and look fantastic in the spring. We have acquired players who do it, you know, a little bit differently, but the way we've always wanted to do it. You know, like that on-base, contact-oriented, create team offense. And I will say this, and I guess in June, July, September of this year, we can have the conversation again. You know, injuries aside, because no one can predict injuries, this is the deepest team that we've had during our time here. And I think the players see that. You know, there's not a lot of holes up and down in that lineup. We may not have a ton of household names, but we do have some grinders. We have talented players. We have guys that can create offense. We have one of the best starting rotations in the league. When healthy, we have among the, if not the best bullpen, you know, in baseball. that's an exciting thing. Now it's on us to go out and perform because we do have the talent to do some damage this year.
Jerry, always a pleasure. We appreciate you cutting out time as always and look forward to talking to you during the season.
You bet, guys.
Hear Wyman and Bob every afternoon 2 to 7.